Hello, I'm Rob, a producer on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 2nd of June 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post. This remains in paper envelopes, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Calling 01902 213 210. Visiting our website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Nikki, Helen, Simon, Liz, Christine, Angela, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country, we have the Flashback Quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, information about World Environment Day, the weather, an edition of Sounds of Nature, a brief interview with Mina for Volunteers Week, and rounding all that off, a new feature from Graham Fisher called In My Opinion. But first we start with our new Guess the Sound quiz. It's as simple as the title suggests. I'm going to play a sound clip, and all you have to do is simply guess what it is. So without any further ado, here's this week's clip. Have a ponder on that, and Mina will reveal the answer later alongside our usual quiz answers. Now we start as always with some local news, brought to us by Angela, Liz and Christine.
City of Wolverhampton Council has secured a deal to house the first ministerial department outside of London at the city's new I-9 office building. The Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government will make the city's I-9 development its joint headquarters when construction is completed later this year. It will take up the ground and fourth floors, housing hundreds of staff, including ministers and senior civil servants, with the council currently supporting the department with the recruitment for new vacancies. The council's deputy leader and cabinet member for City Economy, Councillor Stephen Simpkins, said, "This is a huge vote of confidence in the City of Wolverhampton. The council has worked hard to make this happen, and we are delighted that our city has been chosen to host this historic move away from Whitehall. It's also a big endorsement of the council's ambitious plans to invest in and develop a new multi-million pound commercial district in the heart of the city centre, right next to our new award-winning railway station with its excellent connections to London, Birmingham and Manchester. We are currently enjoying record levels of private and public investment with £4.4 billion on site or in the pipeline. Now, the kudos of being the first place outside of Whitehall to host a government department will create a real buzz and interest in our city, attracting further investment, which is exactly what we want to be able to relight Wolverhampton after the pandemic."
Trading standards officers are checking up on pubs across the Black Country to ensure they are sticking to the rules, with one borough revoking two licences. In Walsall alone, officers have visited 500 pubs since the start of the pandemic, and two premises have had their licences revoked. Councillor Gary Perry, deputy leader for Resilient Communities at Walsall Council, said, "Throughout the pandemic, officers from Regulatory Services' COVID-19 response team have worked with pubs, focusing on the principle of encouraging educating and supporting self-compliance. This has included regularly planned communications and approximately 500 face-to-face visits to pubs in the borough, some of which have been carried out jointly with West Midlands Police. Meanwhile, Wolverhampton Council officers said they have seen minor breaches since pubs reopened. Cabinet Member for City Environment and Climate Change, Councillor Steve Evans, said, "Since the reopening, officers have been undertaking visits to premises across the city to ensure continued COVID compliance. Joint patrols with the police are also ongoing to ensure businesses continue to operate safely across Wolverhampton. Joint partnership working with public health and the police has enabled us to quickly identify problematic areas and take swift action. As a result, we have seen very good levels of compliance across the city. Where minor breaches have occurred, officers have been able to quickly spot and rectify the problems. The minor breaches typically involve customers not adhering to the rules." And Councillor Nicholas Barlow, Dudley Council's Cabinet Member for Health and Adult Social Care, said, "Our trading standards team carries out regular evening checks to hospitality together with West Midlands Police. We have mostly found compliance to be good, with venues trying hard to operate safely and in compliance with COVID legislation. Whenever there are concerns, we work with venues to offer advice and support. Since hospitality has been allowed to reopen, none of our inspections have necessitated enforcement action."
Over 232,000 COVID-19 jabs have now been given in Wolverhampton, with vaccine eligibility being extended to anyone aged 30 and over. Latest figures show 232,196 life-saving vaccinations have been delivered in the city. A total of 142,360 residents have had at least one dose of the vaccine, while 89,836 people are now fully vaccinated, having had both doses. The vaccine is currently available to anyone aged 30 plus or who will turn 30 before the 1st of July. The clinically extremely vulnerable, people with a learning disability, frontline health and social care workers, and people in receipt of carer's allowance or who are the main carer of an elderly or disabled person. Anyone who is eligible for the vaccine but hasn't had it yet is urged to book theirs as soon as possible via the National Booking website. Councillor Jasper Jaspel, the City of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Public Health and Wellbeing, said, "The vaccine is the best protection we have against COVID-19, and it's brilliant news that more than 142,000 residents have had at least one jab. Even better than that, nearly 90,000 residents have now had both doses of the vaccine, which gives them maximum protection against this deadly virus. Given that the new, potentially more transmissible variant, first identified in India, is now circulating in Wolverhampton, and that case rates are starting to creep up again nationally, it is imperative that everyone gets their jab as soon as they are able to, not only to protect themselves, but others too. I would urge anyone aged 30 and over, and particularly those aged 50 and over, who are at greater risk from serious illness from COVID-19, to make sure they get both doses of the vaccination as soon as possible."
More people are being admitted to hospital as a result of obesity in the Black Country, new figures show. NHS England Medical Director Professor Stephen Powis said the latest shocking figures, which show how obesity-related admissions have risen by nearly a fifth nationally, are a growing sign that an obesity crisis is sweeping the nation. In all four Black Country boroughs, women accounted for more than 7 in 10 obesity-related hospital cases. Nationally, there were just over 1 million admissions due to obesity in 2019 to 2020, up 17% from 2018 to 2019. There was huge disparity in rates across England, with the most deprived areas worse affected than those with low deprivation levels. The West Midlands was the second worst affected of the country's nine regions, with a rate of 2,261 per 100,000 population. Professor Powys said the nation's obesity crisis is putting hundreds of thousands of people at greater risk of becoming severely ill with COVID, as well as heart attacks, stroke, cancer and other deadly diseases. Carrying extra pounds not only puts a strain on your physical health, but also on the health service, he added. As lockdown restrictions start to ease, there's never been a better time to take steps to live a healthier lifestyle. The government has announced a raft of new measures to help tackle obesity, including a ban on junk food adverts online and calories on menus for meals. Diabetes UK, which has campaigned for menu calorie labelling as part of its Food Up Front campaign, has welcomed the move.
An MP has demanded an end to a town's raw deal on policing, calling for a new police station to be opened as a matter of urgency. Suzanne Webb has urged police chiefs to deploy more officers on the streets of Stourbridge and to open up a new station with a front desk for people to report crime. The town has been without a police base since its last one on New Road closed in August 2017, while Stourbridge's neighbourhood policing team is now housed 3 miles away in Briley Hill. Ms Webb has called on Mr Jameson's successor, Simon Foster, to start investing in policing right here and right now. The Conservative MP said, "Everywhere I go, people tell me they want more police in Stourbridge and a police station in their community. Now that the new PCC is announcing more officers, I want to see some of them deployed to Stourbridge and a permanent presence in our town that people can go to when they need to report crime and get help." Stourbridge has received a raw deal in policing since the closure of the station. Mr Foster said Stourbridge would get a share of the 450 extra police officers he is planning to deploy in communities across the West Midlands. He said that in the coming months he will be looking closely at West Midlands Police's Estates programme, which has seen more than 20 Black Country police stations close down in recent years. "We are committed to ensuring a new base for the neighbourhood team in Stourbridge," Mr Foster added. "I look forward to working closely with the Dudley Council and Suzanne Webb MP on these issues."
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here with your roundup of everything that's been happening at the Beacon Centre. First up this week, we need your help. Can you help Beacon win £1,000 to support our charity? The 2021 Movement for Good Awards is giving 500 charities a donation of £1,000 each. But we need your help, as the more nominations we get, the more chance we have of winning. All you need to do is head to www.movementforgood.com. That's www.movementforgood.com. And use our charity number 216092, that's 216092, to nominate us. It takes under a minute to complete the form, and it could make a big difference for those we help. We've never needed your support more due to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Thank you so much for your support. Now, we think we've got an amazing team here at Beacon, so we thought we'd start introducing you to some of those who work so hard to support people with sight loss. This week, it's sight loss advisor Pete Moody. Pete has been a part of the Beacon family for over a decade, having first joined us as a volunteer. His role is to help those new to Beacon services with information, advice and guidance. He can also support you if you're looking for equipment that can help make life that little bit easier. He told us that the best part of his role was making a difference. He said, "Often people with sight loss are unaware of the support, services and equipment out there. To point them in the right direction or solve a problem like not being able to read or go outside on a sunny day is very rewarding." You can reach Pete or any of our sight loss advisors by calling 01902 880 111 or emailing inquiries@beaconvision.org. Did you get out and about over the bank holiday? Whether you were at home or out enjoying the nicer weather, we really hope you enjoyed it. If you've been able to get out more due to the relaxation of the COVID-19 restrictions, what do you think? I think it feels pretty great, but a little strange as well. For those who still want to do things virtually though, we still have virtual activities taking place each and every week. There's all sorts of sessions you can join in with, including our new Armchair Travel Group, which this week is taking a trip to Italy. I like the sound of that. It's never too late to sign up and join. To find out more about our virtual activity programme, email kwilliams@beaconvision.org. That's kwilliams@beaconvision.org. Or call her on 01902 880 111 Monday to Friday, and she can fill you in on what it's all about. That's it for this week. Hopefully, I'll be back again soon to catch up with you all. Bye-bye.
Thank you for that update, Helen. Up next, we have some more local news. And starting this section, it's Liz.
Dudley Town Centre's Very Light Rail project has officially opened a test track facility for rail and infrastructure testing. The new test track runs from the foot of Castle Hill to Cinderbank Island and supports Dudley's ambition of being an international centre for rail innovation. It will soon be home to the Coventry VLR prototype vehicle, which will undergo extensive testing this year. The track will also be open to other clients. In August last year, the West Midlands Combined Authority supported a £13 million bid to bridge the remaining funding required for the scheme. The Combined Authority has also supported the VLR scheme as part of its wider vision for the West Midlands. Nick Mallinson, CEO of Black Country Innovative Manufacturing Organisation, added, "Our new test track will provide a major step forward in the delivery of a world-class innovation centre, and I am pleased that we already have several clients ready to start using the facility. The centre aims to develop a new VLR industry, encouraging market demand, developing new solutions, and creating a UK manufacturing supply chain centred on the Black Country. VLR offers a new, lower-cost public transport solution that is set to transform the rail industry, providing integrated VLR systems as an alternative to heavy rail and traditional metro transport."
Residents could soon find out whether plans to build on the seven cornfields will be given the go-ahead, according to a campaigning councillor. Councillor Paul Birch says he's expecting positive news by mid-July as to whether developers can build 650 homes on the 87.2 acres of Greenbelt in Wolverhampton. No official decision has been made about the seven cornfields, with council planners still eyeing up where a forecasted shortfall of homes should be built across the Black Country. But Blakenhall Councillor Birch, who launched the Save the Seven Cornfields campaign, has said, "I'm hopeful there will be positive news about the seven cornfields by mid-July." Councillor Birch, who has threatened to resign from the council if the plans go ahead, continued, "We have laid out our case to the Black Country Framework team, and we are expecting that we will be pushing against an open door, as thousands of residents cannot be wrong and a handful of politicians right. We need to be heard, and I believe we have done enough to make our feelings known. The proposals have attracted a 6,500-strong public petition from the local community."
Dozens of new jobs could be created if a Stourbridge recycling plant is given the go-ahead to expand its operation. Pegasus is looking to get permanent planning permission from Dudley Council to remain at Bot Lane in Lye, where it has a temporary agreement in place until August. The firm is also looking to gain retrospective approval for a new washing facility for the aggregate it recycles. It is estimated the expansion would create between 30 and 50 new jobs to add to the 80 employees on site. The plans have prompted strong objections from nearby residents who said they suffer from issues including dust and noise pollution, traffic issues, and the plant working out of hours. But letters of support have also been submitted, including some from employees who have backed the proposals as creating new jobs and supporting a local business. One resident said, "This is not a good idea. I thought we were short of housing. Build houses there then, like the land was earmarked for. Aggregate businesses should not be in residential areas. Too much dust and too noisy. Dudley Council, do your job." In the application, agents Emery Planning said, "The allocation of our client site for employment, waste recycling use, would provide future security to an existing and well-established local business and to help ensure an adequate supply of employment land and waste management facilities across the Black Country region."
Tesco is launching a new rapid delivery service in Wolverhampton, which will allow the supermarket chain to deliver groceries to customers within an hour. The retail giant is initially trialling the Whoosh delivery service at just this one store and will then assess potential opportunities to expand the model. It said the one-hour service will be available for customers in selected postcodes around its Tesco Express store in Willenhall Road, Wolverhampton. The supermarket chain has seen soaring online growth during the pandemic, but has so far refrained from following rivals into the on-demand grocery space. Sainsbury's operates its own Chop Chop rapid delivery business, as well as services through Deliveroo and Uber Eats. Meanwhile, Waitrose recently scrapped its own Zoom rapid delivery business in favour of expanding its tie-up with Deliveroo. A raft of major grocery retailers, including Morrisons, Aldi and the Co-op, also use delivery operators such as Deliveroo and Uber Eats to reach customers. Tesco said customers will now be able to order on demand via its app or Tesco.com, with products delivered by bike, moped or car, with a £5 delivery fee. Chris Pode, online managing director at Tesco, said, "Customers are telling us that they would welcome the addition of a 60-minute delivery to their door option as part of our online grocery service. We'll use the pilot to understand how Whoosh would work best for both our customers and our colleagues."
Two Black Country businessmen have been thanked for funding replacement life-saving kits which were stolen. Defibrillators were stolen in February from Upper Gornal Methodist Church in Upper Gornal, Dudley, and Brooklands Amateur Boxing Club in Woodset and Dudley. Thieves forced open storage cabinets and damaged them beyond repair. David Hazelwood from Straight Mobility in Russell's Hall, Dudley, and Dean Perks from Changing Rooms in Upper Gornal paid for the replacements. Mr. Hazelwood, who covered the entire cost of replacing one of the defibrillators, said, "I was saddened to hear that the life-saving kit had been stolen. These devices save lives by providing access to early treatment for someone in cardiac arrest before an ambulance arrives. I'm pleased our donation will help to keep us all safe." Mr. Perks, who donated a new storage cabinet, said, "I know St. John's Ambulance originally fundraised to provide this equipment. It was shocking that someone would take them. We were happy to provide a new ultra-secure cabinet to prevent this from happening again." Kieran Casey, president of St. John's Ambulance in Upper Gornal, has paid tribute to the pair, saying, "On behalf of everyone in our community, a huge thank you to David and Dean for their generosity in replacing this vital equipment. Early defibrillation really is the key to surviving a cardiac arrest. A Just Giving page set up to replace the second stolen defibrillator has received £1,100.
Now we head over to Mina, who asked us the questions for this week's quiz.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. How many brains does an octopus have? Question 2. What is Barbie's full name? Question 3. How heavy is a blue whale's heart? Question 4. What is impossible to do if you hold your nose? Question 5. What is the filling inside a Kit Kat made from? And question 6. Why are Heinz 57 products so called? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show, but for now, good luck!
Thanks for those questions, Mina. Up next, we have some more local news, brought to us by Christine, Liz, Ed, and starting us off, it's Angela.
Dudley's Empty River Island store is to become a bingo and slot machine centre. Planners at Dudley Council approved proposals for Casino Gaming to take over the Grade 2 listed shop building in High Street. The centre will see 6 new jobs created and will operate 24 hours a day, offering bingo and low-stakes slot machines. The applicants say the adult gaming centre will breathe new life into the empty unit and generate extra footfall to the area, which will boost other businesses. The River Island store closed its doors in March 2020 following the UK government's decision to implement wide-ranging restrictions to mitigate COVID-19. In July 2020, restrictions were eased and uses including pubs, shops and hairdressers were allowed to reopen. However, River Island chose to close its store on the High Street permanently. Planning Officer James Mead said, "It is considered that the proposal by Casino Gaming would not have any detrimental impact on the vitality and viability of the centre. Furthermore, local residents would not be detrimentally affected by the proposal."
Poundland is moving into the convenience store sector and has ambitions to open hundreds over the next 3 to 5 years, creating new jobs. The Walsall-based single price chain has identified an opportunity to open up in smaller units as satellites to its bigger stores in cities and major towns, and as standalone small shops in smaller towns where there is currently no Poundland presence. Chief Executive Barry Williams said the first Poundland Essentials convenience stores had just been opened in Yorkshire. It comes after the company opened its first online shop for customers living in Walsall and Birmingham. Poundland's central operations have been transferring since November from Willenhall to its new customer support centre in Midland Road, Walsall. The investment in the new centre amounts to £5 million and it will eventually house 350 staff, but through COVID has not been up to 50% occupancy. Mr. Williams said of the Essentials convenience stores, "We will be extending that model to other parts of the country. We have medium-sized stores, but there are only so many you can lay down in the market. The small store format allows us to compete for more market share. There are plenty of towns and markets where you can have a large store and smaller stores to complement it. The difference is we operate one price irrespective of where we are, which is unique in the market."
The second phase of a rollout of smart units to prevent flooding from blockages has begun in the region. Severn Trent is set to begin phase 2 of its smart unit rollout to prevent flooding from blockages caused by wet wipes, cooking fat and other unflushables. More than 1,500 units have already been installed in Wolverhampton and Sutton Park since the trial started in September 2020, and phase 2 will see another 3,000 units deployed across the Severn Trent region. The company plans to install a total of 40,000 units over the next 5 years, which use a hanging sensor to detect rising water levels with a tilt switch and communicate data back to the control room. If an alert is triggered, a team of engineers can respond to investigate and clear any blockages forming before a more serious incident occurs. Tactical Asset Planning Manager Margaret Williams said, "Following the successful installation of our first 1,500 units, we are really pleased to be able to quickly follow on with phase 2. These units will be installed in blockage, flooding and pollution hotspot areas across the region, where we have identified a higher than normal amount of incidents."
A city MP has joined a call from her constituents to rename a road after the departing Wolves manager. Wolverhampton North East MP Jane Stevenson has made the call following the departure of Nuno Espirito Santo. Nuno left his job as Wolves manager on Sunday after four successful years at Molineux, which saw the club promoted to the Premier League in 2018. Since then, some Wolverhampton residents have contacted Ms. Stevenson to suggest that a road in the city is renamed in his honour. She said, "He got our club back into the Premier League where it belongs, and not only that, he has also led Wolves into Europa League in their first season back in the top flight." Local residents and Wolves fans have contacted me to ask if a road in the city could be renamed after Nuno, and I think this is a fantastic idea. It is the least we can do for someone who led Wolves to success, put our city back on the map, and even donate his own money during the pandemic. I would encourage every Wolves fan to get behind this campaign, and I urge the local highways authority to consider this request.
Families are flocking back to the region's cinemas to enjoy a flick with their loved ones. With half-term, the reopening of the pitches is offering parents another option to keep their children occupied. There was some uncertainty about just how willing people would be to return to cinemas because of COVID concerns, although they continue to have strict safety measures in place. As big screen releases were cancelled through the pandemic, films also went to at-home screening platforms like Amazon and Netflix, leading to concerns that people might just get out of the habit of travelling to their local multiplex. But since restrictions in England were eased on May 17th, numbers at cinemas have been encouraging, helped somewhat by the inclement British weather. Families and friends met up at Showcase Cinema at Castlegate, opposite Dudley Zoo, to make the most of its reopening, which came this week. Mark Lawrence, who is a factory worker, his partner Abigail Taylor and daughter 2-year-old Kiara Taylor, were some of the first to arrive for an afternoon showing of Peter Rabbit 2, the children's film that is helping to drive the successful return of cinema. Mark said, "I've worked throughout the pandemic, but it's really great to be back out with the family. Just to be out of the house and not at work and to do something altogether is exciting." Mum, Abigail added, "We have managed to get out for a carvery last week, but this is the first time that we've been out to somewhere like the cinema since they reopened. It's nice to be able to take Kiara out somewhere too, as before, it would just be taking her to nursery and bringing her home."
Coming up next is a piece on Volunteers Week. Without volunteers, the Talking News would not be possible. One such volunteer who you've all heard is Mina. Up next, she shares with us her views on volunteering. A quick chat with Talking News volunteer Mina. How do you get involved in volunteering?
The way I got involved in volunteering was through a staff member at Beacon. I was approached as I expressed that I wanted to use my voice with confidence. That's how I got involved in Talking News.
How does your volunteering help?
My volunteering helps the wider community keep up to date with news, sports, various topics that the Talking News offers. And it keeps me connected with the wider community too.
What do you enjoy most about volunteering?
Volunteering gives me great pleasure. It makes me feel valued. And I just really enjoy being connected with the wider community.
How has volunteering benefited you?
Volunteering has definitely benefited me. It's allowed me to connect with a lot more people, and it continues for me to get involved with more and more varieties and different topics through the Talking News.
Would you recommend volunteering to others?
Yes, of course, definitely. I would recommend volunteering to others, as you can take part. Whatever suits you and how you feel comfortable doing it.
Any other comments?
Volunteering, I think, is a magical thing to do. It gives me boost. It gives me great pleasure to take part. And I feel valued doing it.
To find out more about volunteering at Beacon, visit beaconvision.org/volunteer. Coming up now, we have our final block of local news, brought to us by Angela, Ed, Liz, and starting us off, it's Christine.
Stourbridge's Green Duck Brewing Company has named a 4.2% strength ale, George's Rail Ale, in honour of six-year-old Ginger Tom, George, who resides at Stourbridge Junction. The bottles also feature a cartoon image of George, who helped the station reach the final of a World Cup of Stations competition that was run on Twitter in the autumn when Stourbridge Junction narrowly lost out to Glasgow Queen Street. The brewery in Rufford Road invited suggested names for their new beer, which also included Perfect Pale and Paws Off My Point. George's Rail Ale came out on top in the Twitter poll with 66.1% in favour. Station supervisor Ian Tomlinson said George had been living at the station for 3 years and had his own room. He used to live with a lady who lived opposite the station and used to come and see us regularly. When the owner emigrated to Spain, it was agreed that we would keep him, and when I retire, I will take him home and he will live with me, explained Ian. George is very popular with all the passengers. Some of them buy him tins of cat food, including our postman. Some people who have heard about George on social media make a special point of seeing him on their visits. People are coming from all over the country just to see him. He's a real star, said Ian. The bottles are on sale from the brewery bar in Rufford Road, and Green Duck director Alex Hill said that the money raised, once the costs of producing the beer have been covered, will go to charity.
Family is the most important thing in life, according to Violet Wise, who celebrated her 100th birthday with a two-day celebration at her daughter's home in Wolverhampton. She also puts her still clear complexion down to drinking lots of water during her life, although she admits to enjoying the occasional glass of sherry. The two-day celebrations began with visits from family and friends, including 3 children, 4 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren, and she received a card from the Queen. The following day, she was able to catch up with more news from family and friends as the celebrations continued. Born in Wolverhampton, during her younger days, Violet enjoyed dancing and worked as a domestic assistant. She married her first husband, Alfred Williams, in 1946 in St Luke's Church in Blakenhall, and they went on to have 3 children, Ray, now aged 74, who lives in Wolverhampton, Leslie, aged 72, and Sylvia, now aged 68. Sadly, Alfred died 10 years after marriage, but romance blossomed a second time when Violet worked as a house cleaner for Jack Wise, and they married in 1984 at Wolverhampton Registry Office. They were together for 19 years until Jack died in 2003. Violet now lives with her daughter, Sylvia Busby, in Lanesfield, Wolverhampton, and enjoys watching soap dramas on television. She recalls that when they were young, she loved taking the children out for walks and picnics. Sylvia said, "Mum has always gone out to ensure myself and my 2 brothers had what we needed. She has been an absolutely wonderful mother and enjoys nothing more than being with the family."
Major toy retailer Toy Town has opened its doors at Maryhill Shopping Centre. Located on the Lower Mall next to Primark, Toy Town stocks a full range of toys, games and entertainment products. The store officially opened its doors to customers on Friday. The new superstore also boasts a dedicated Baby World nursery department, selling a range of baby items including car seats, nursery furniture and prams. Alan Simpson, owner and managing director of Toy Town, said, "We are so excited to be able to share our comprehensive Toy Town range and our great value products with visitors at Maryhill. The centre is the perfect location to increase our footprint in the West Midlands, and the store at Maryhill represents our biggest ever store, complete with our Baby World Nurseries department." Duncan Burns, marketing manager at Maryhill, said, "We are pleased to welcome Toy Town to the centre, offering a huge range of toys, baby essentials and games, which we are sure will be popular with many of our family shoppers." In addition to the return of Mothercare inside Boots early this year, The arrival of Baby World as a part of Toy Town offers parents even more choice. We look forward to announcing more new brands coming to Maryhill in the near future.
Hundreds of Mini enthusiasts are expected to flock to Himley Hall for a screening of The Italian Job for this summer's drive-in movie festival. There are 11 movies to choose from over the four themed days in June, but Cars will be the stars of the show on Saturday the 26th of June. The morning starts with the animated film Cars, followed by the all-time classic Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Mini Club enthusiasts will be visiting the site and watching during the afternoon with screenings of the two versions of The Italian Job, firstly starting with the 2003 remake starring Mark Wahlberg and ending the day with a 1969 classic starring Michael Caine. Councillor Simon Phipps, Dudley Council's Cabinet Member for Regeneration and Enterprise, said, "It was really great to meet David and the enthusiasts from the British Mini Club. I'm sure that having them on site for the screenings will add an extra dimension to the day. The drive-in cinema is a great way for people to enjoy time together while still feeling reassured that they can social distance. And with 4 days of themed films, there really is something for every age and interest to enjoy. As the films are all shown on a massive 100 square metre screen, viewers can tune their car radio in to hear the audio from the film. A selection of street food vendors will be at the event, or guests can bring along their own snacks and drinks to enjoy whilst watching the film. All cars will be spaced in 5 metre squares to comply with social distancing measures to make the event safe and enjoyable."
A student mental health nurse is hoping to encourage local businesses to back her campaign to recognise people who do help other people in their local community. Dion Fantham, aged 24, from Wolverhampton, is the founder of Mindful Monday, a not-for-profit organisation which hopes to reward people for the kindness they show for others. She has appealed to local businesses to offer treats which can then be given to someone nominated through the mindfulmonday.co.uk website. Optimal Beauty in Warsaw is the first to donate a treat with the offer of a free treatment voucher and bouquet of flowers. The person judged as the most deserving will be announced on the website next month. Dion, a student at Staffordshire University, said, "The Acts of Kindness project is aimed at providing a care package to someone nominated by the local community. It is an attempt to support the community and spread some random acts of kindness. I am hoping a lot of businesses will come on board to recognise people who do something for other people. The idea is that the presentations will be a nice surprise for people. I founded Mindful Monday in January last year and everything went online because of COVID. I hope that we will be able to select one person each month for a treat, and if many businesses come forward to donate items, then we may be able to announce more than one recipient. The objective is to change the way people consider mental health. We believe everyone has mental health, and we should all acknowledge this, and by doing random acts of kindness, people can improve things for others."
Now it's time to hear from Flashback Roger, who asked for us some more amazing facts.
Hello everyone. Here we are with the first spot of June, so let's hope we get some warmer weather to enjoy now, eh? Well, I've got an assortment of eyebrow-raising items for you this week, so I hope you'll enjoy them. Now then, for number one, here's an unusual one for you. Did you know that an octopus has 9 brains, as well as 3 hearts and blue blood? They can change colour in seconds as camouflage, though it can be minutes for the total colour change to take place, together with a change in its texture, to complete the deception. There actually aren't 57 varieties of Heinz products, and there never were. Company founder H.J. Heinz thought his product should have a number, and he liked number 57. And if you want a handy hint, they say that if you hit the glass bottle on the 57 and not on the bottom, the ketchup will come out easier. Personally, I prefer a squeezy bottle. And who amongst us didn't know that the Barbie doll's full name is Barbara Millicent Roberts from Willows, Wisconsin? Her birthday is on March the 9th, 1959, which is when she was first displayed at the New York Toy Fair. The heart of the blue whale, which is the largest animal on Earth, is 5 feet long and weighs 400 pounds. The whale in total weighs 40,000 pounds. For comparison, an elephant's heart weighs around 30 pounds and a human heart a mere 10 ounces. Now here's a useful life skill for you if ever you get into a situation where the person next to you is humming tunelessly. Just pinch their nose, because it's impossible to hum while holding your nose. Go on, try it. I'm sure you will. Like me, have you ever wondered what's inside a Kit Kat? The unique filling loved by millions, including me, is actually broken bits of Kit Kats that have damaged during production. They get ground up and go between the wafers inside along with cocoa and sugar. Now that's a good way of not letting anything go to waste, isn't it? And finally, Minnie and Mickey Mouse never married, while in real life, the cartoon's official voice actors have. Minnie's current voice actress, Russie Taylor, married Wayne Alwyn, who voiced Mickey for 32 years, and they remained married until Alwyn's death in May 2009. So the next time you see Mickey and Minnie holding hands and looking lovingly at each other, remember the real-life romance between these familiar and enduring voices. Aww, what a lovely romantic item to end on this week. I hope it's left you with a nice warm feeling and all dreamy-eyed. So with that, I'll clear off and I'll probably be whistling When You Wish Upon a Star all day long now. Any road up. I'll say goodbye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Doo-dee-doo-dee-doo-dee-doo. Ta-ra.
Thanks, Roger. Now we head over to Mina with the weather forecast for the week ahead.
The weather for this week ahead looks to be settled and warmer, perfect for getting out in the garden. Temperatures will be steady throughout the week, hovering around 20 degrees. UV levels are expected to be moderate throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 4:47 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:28 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday, 4th of June, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 20 degrees. On Saturday, 5th of June, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 19 degrees. And on Sunday, 6th of June, all the way through to Thursday, 10th of June, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 21 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Thanks that, Mina. Now we head to some more Sounds of Nature, which this week is brought to us by Ed.
A scarce wader, the avocat, is about the same size as an oyster catcher, but much more slender. It feeds on aquatic insects, worms and crustaceans, which it finds by sweeping its bill from side to side in shallow water. It is often seen on estuaries and mudflats at the coast, where it breeds on exposed mud in a dugout scrape. Avocats are mainly white with black patches on the back and wings and a black cap stretching down the back of the neck. They have long blue legs, which are most easily recognised by their long black upturned bills.
This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Up now, we have the sport. Wolves are said to be flexible on the futures of their three loan players and will give their manager a chance to assess them. Striker William Jose, fullback Rian Aitonuri and midfielder Vitinha all joined on temporary deals for last season, but their futures remain uncertain, with Wolves searching for a new boss. Club have options to sign all three of them permanently for £22 million, £20 million and £18 million respectively, but it is also understood that Wolves are not bound to those fees and have room to negotiate lower prices if they decide to sign any of the three players. Aitonuri has appeared 24 times for Wolves this season and has steadily improved, while Vitinha has played 22 times in all competitions and began to make his mark towards the end of the season. Both players are young, aged 19 and 21 respectively, and are highly rated, but with the club needing to be creative in the summer transfer window, it remains to be seen whether they would be signed permanently for the full amount. Jose, meanwhile, scored once in 18 games and often disappointed with his displays. At 29 years old, and with Raul Jimenez returning and Fabio Silva still developing, Jose is unlikely to return to Molineux. However, the futures of all three players is not yet determined, with the club still searching for a manager. Wolves have held talks with Bruno Lage this week, while discreet inquiries have also been made for Frank Lampard. The new boss is expected to be announced any time within the next 2 weeks, and they will have a say in the future of the loan players. The Wolves hierarchy will hold their own views on the three loanees too, and will make their decision after a new manager has been appointed. Hal Robson-Kanu and Carl Edwards are amongst the players who will leave Albion once their contracts have expired, the Baggies have confirmed. The Baggies have published their released and retained list following the end of the 2020-21 campaign. Striker Robson-Kanu will leave the club after 5 years, during which time he made 154 appearances and scored 24 goals. Winger Edwards, who joined the club as a six-year-old, leaves having featured almost 50 times for the first team. Charlie Austin, Kamil Krasiski, Branislav Ivanovic, Lee Peltier, Andy Longeren will also depart following the conclusion of their contracts. The Baggers have offered new deals to promising youngsters Vin Aziz, Zach Delaney, Toby King and Owen Windsor, while the club also activated the option to extend goalkeeper Ted Kahn's deal. A statement from the club said, "The club would like to thank all departing players for their efforts during their time at the Hawthorns and we wish them every success in the future." Meanwhile, Albion still have a couple of candidates they wish to interview before they announce their new manager. Reports have emerged stating Chris Wilde will be the next Baggies boss, with a deal for the 52-year-old close to being finalised. But while Wilder has been interviewed for the job and is leading candidate, it is understood Albion want to interview all the men they have shortlisted for the job before making their final decision, with Roy Hodgson and Frank Lampard also being considered for the top job. Coming up now, we have an article from Nikki, all about World Environment Day.
Hello, this is Nikki, and here is a piece taken from the Environment Society about World Environment Day. World Environment Day on the 5th of June is a UN initiative which takes place each year on the 5th of June. The Global Awareness Programme shines attention on a particularly pressing environmental theme, providing a platform for global education and inspiration and creating a legacy of action up to, including and beyond the 5th of June. Ecosystem Restoration is 2021's World Environment Day's theme, marking the launch of the UN Decade on Ecosystem Restoration. This year's World Environment Day will be hosted by Pakistan. You might think that this is a problem only for global institutions and governments, yet that couldn't be further from the truth. Imagine if we were able to increase our connection with nature, especially in cities, and through this, repair and restore all our ecosystems all around the world. That is the vision for World Environment Day 2021. Following the announcement of the 2021 theme, the Environment Society spoke to chartered environmentalists from across sectors to get their reflections on the importance of this theme. Jason Reeves, Head of Policy and Communications at CIEEM, which is the Chartered Institute of Ecology and Environmental Management, explains why 2021 is a year of urgent action for our ecosystems. This year marks an important milestone for the environment. We know it should have been last year, but 2020 didn't go to plan. In the build-up to the United Nations Convention on Biological Diversity's COP15 event in October 2021, at which the world's nations will agree a new global biodiversity framework GBF, we first have World Environment Day on 5th of June 2021. World Environment Day 2021 marks the launch of the decade on ecosystem restoration, hashtag Generation Restoration. The GBF leads on to each nation having to implement meaningful changes at a national and local level to restore nature, part of which is making real short and long-term changes to reverse the decline of nature. Recent reports, including the Dasgupta Review, show just how much we rely on nature to support people, communities, and economies. Linked to nature, restoration is addressing climate change. These two global crises are inextricably linked, and the best way to reverse the effects of climate change is to restore nature through nature-based solutions. As environmental professionals, it is our role to proactively work to restore nature, but our role is also to educate and enthuse others about nature, its value to all of us, and how we all have a part to play. Dougal Driver, Vice Chair of Society for the Environment and CEO at Grown in Britain, agrees. There are few corners of the world, and probably none in the United Kingdom, that are not touched by the human hand. Unfortunately, we have a habit of intervening with ecosystems in a less than helpful way. It is therefore a duty for us to help put damaged ecosystems back onto their natural journeys so that they can not only survive, but thrive. If we are to restore our ecosystems, the role of environmental professionals is vital for two reasons. The impact of our work to protect the environment, but also going beyond that to our role in providing inspiration and leadership, showcasing effective science-based actions that others can take to help meet this challenge. Ecosystems exist not only at a global and national scale, but also regional and local. This means that everyone can make a difference through our everyday actions and choices to repair, expand, support, and if necessary, replace damaged and degraded ecosystems. Let's use World Environment Day as a catalyst for action by all. Martin Ballard, Group Head of Environment at Wilmot Dixon Holdings, reflects, "Despite the challenges for nature, 2020 shows that there's hope we can learn to live with nature. It's been tremendous to see families getting outdoors together in their local areas, and when able, exercising with friends. People are talking about what they've seen in their local area or done in their gardens. Using the World Environment Day 20, Biodiversity Resources provides a springboard for a World Environment Day 2021. What's been gained in the last 12 months could become the new norm for the next 12 years and more, if we hold on to what we've gained. Making space for and living with nature is possible. It's been great to see and hear people recognising the benefits for their mental health and well-being, taking more exercise and enjoying the wildlife within the built environment." The last word goes to Martin Gettings, Director of Sustainability at Canary Wharf Group. "Global ecosystem restoration may be perceived to be far away, the forest, the peat bog, the ocean, the river, the mountain, but our connection to all this nature starts with us in our cities, with the products we buy, the choices we make, the way we live our lives. We are all connected to nature, and we can all help to restore global ecosystems. This is a 10-year plan. We can all play our part. And as environmental professionals, we want to help everyone to be able to do just that. Now is the time, and we might just change the world."
Thanks, Nikki. And coming up next, we have Mina with the answer to this week's quiz and the Guess the Sound quiz.
Here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. How many brains does an octopus have? The answer? 9. Question 2. What is Barbie's full name? The answer here is Barbara Millicent Roberts. Question 3. How heavy is a blue whale's heart? And the answer here is 400 pounds. Question 4. What is impossible to do if you hold your nose? And the answer? You can't hum. Question 5. What is the filling inside a Kit Kat made from? And the answer here is crushed up Kit Kat bits. And finally, question 6. Why are Heinz 57 products so called? And the answer here is because its founder, Mr. H.J. Hines, just liked the number. How did you do? Great, I hope. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, did you get the answer to the guess the sound question that Rob asked at the start of the show? Here's one more chance to hear it before I tell you the answer. The sound you just heard was a recording of a farrier. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, we now head over to Graham Fisher, who this week starts a new feature called In My Opinion.
Hello. Some years ago, in my days with what was then 102.5 The Bridge, before its reincarnation as Black Country Radio, I ran an afternoon chat show in which a wide range of the great and the good extended me the courtesy of sitting opposite in the hot seat. From holy men to engineers, charity founders to entertainers, we welcomed the lot. One such was a local comedian. Am I even allowed to employ that gender-specific term these days? Ah, how times change. But its use does narrow it down a bit as to whom I refer. Anyway, a local comedian who caused such uproarious merriment that saw me actually slide off my seat under the table in uncontrollable laughter, whilst in the next studio, and ostensibly being introduced to the finer points of broadcasting, a gaggle of visitors looking through the window were themselves doubled up with laughter, looking at me, doubled up with laughter. And the topic? My guest's ranting, excoriating diatribe on the difference between us Black Country yam-yams and our neighbours across the cultural divide beyond Here Be Dragons in Birmingham. Real knockabout stuff, and very, very funny in its mock deprecation of both. Though our sense of rivalry is of its own time and area, we are not alone, and there are numerous other examples of such parochial and largely, though not always similarly benign, antagonisms across the land. In my student days at Sunderland many years ago, for example, I quickly learnt the difference between Wearsiders and their neighbouring Geordies, both of whom, to the outsider, apparently spoke the same language. Note to self and my Brummy mates. They think we talk the same. Doyo just ate that. Thus do yam-yams and Brummies coexist by continuing to hone their mutually disparaging but ultimately non-malevolent repertoire. But imagine for a moment the nomenclatures are changed to, let's say, Tutsi and Hutu. The Rwandan genocide was a mass slaughter of Tutsi and moderate Hutu during the Rwandan Civil War of 1994. Up to 1 million Rwandans were killed, about 70% of the Tutsis' population, and only ended with a military victory of the Rwandan Patriotic Front. Closer to home, but further back in history, the UK was the unwitting beneficiary of the dreadful religious persecution that led to an influx of Huguenots, who brought with them their skills including weaving, lace-making, and, particularly germane to the Stourbridge area, glass-making. We could similarly examine the opposing factions in the Irish Troubles, much of the Middle East, and many other parts of the globe. Now throw into this mix the potential for strife induced by differences in skin colour, lifestyle choice, sexual orientation, or any other number of mutually incompatible factors that are politically de rigueur at the time, and we have a potent mix for the stirring of malcontent. All of these have two features in common. First, the problems, as loosely described here, are universally recognised. I guarantee I could count on the fingers of one hand the number of listeners who have not heard of, or maybe have even experienced for themselves, at least one. second at any given stage, and depending upon their prominence within a given political cycle. Huge amounts of effort, perhaps by way of social intervention, education, or straightforward cash injections, are directed their way. Particularly, it seems, at election time. Or is that just the cynic in me baring its fangs? Yet there is one problem that still goes largely unreported, even unnoticed, certainly to the extent that little is actively done to address it. With a recognition factor that is inversely proportional to its capacity for destruction, it is a problem that has the potential to devastate society, yet in a quietly malignant way that may find us wanting when it is too late to address by the standard fallback methods we currently throw as we would lob a lifebelt. I'll name the problem in one word in just a moment. But before I do, let me set the scene with the entirely true tale of a pub I frequented with my dear late father when we lived in Wollaston near Stourbridge back in the 1980s. It's an Indian restaurant now, which is sad. But not because it's an Indian restaurant, and a rather good one at that, but because of what was lost in the transition. You see, every Friday night, my father and I would go there about 7 p.m. to be greeted by an already packed house that typically included a range of characters I'll attempt to describe. At the bar were a group of friends who, having worked hard all week, intended to play hard for the weekend, commencing with a few beers in their local, whilst attired in fancy dress of the day. One week they'd be American cowboys, the next a gaggle of Regency fops. One never knew. The far end of the bar, out of harm's way, were a group of workers in overalls that told of their immediate past history prior to their wearers relaxing by competing over a game of darts. In the lounge area to our left would be dinner-suited gents and coiffured ladies awaiting taxis to take them to the city for the evening. Birmingham in those days was a city of choice. Wolverhampton was yet to achieve the city status. Whilst in the back room there might be a group of men, inevitably men of West Indian origin, playing their unique variation of overarm dominoes, and so on, but I think you get the picture. The point is, here was a microcosm of a representative, though not exhaustive, range of backgrounds, a cake slice through the ghetto of social strata, all mingling in bonhomie. The one thing that was not in any evidence whatsoever was that problem of one name I referred to earlier, class. The class structure, that time-served feature of our lives that some would suggest has been the bedrock of our civilization almost since these islands were first populated. Institutionalized and ingrained to the extent that it is taken as the norm more so than its relevance to life in the 21st century is questioned, it is the glue that holds together the fabric of our social structure. But does it? Has the concept of class outgrown its usefulness to the extent that it may be damaging that which it seeks to protect? Embedded in the class structure still lies the notion of imperialism. A century since the foundations of the British Empire began to crumble, many of our institutions and aspects of our educational system are still geared to providing skills and leaders for an entity that no longer exists. Change has been afoot for decades. The move from grammar schools towards a comprehensive education system being a notable manifestation. But in this context, the general pace of such change has been anemic. In the meantime, the breaking down of arbitrary barriers, particularly the rise of feminism, disability empowerment and equal rights, has created a dichotomy where the established order is no longer fit for purpose. This is on a societal scale. But a poignant example of it that hits home was provided by a thinker from amongst our own ranks. Former MP and broadcaster Brian Walden, born in West Bromwich and the son of a glassmaker, had, prior to his death in May 2019, spent much of his life questioning the status quo. He told the simple but compelling tale of the factory operative, a working-class man as he describes, who studied, gained proficiency, and achieved promotion, but who could never elevate himself past a certain level as others passed him by. He wondered why, until his suspicions were confirmed one day, when the wealthy owner put his arm around his shoulder and congratulated him on a good morning's work. "Now," said the owner, "I'll go for my lunch and you can get your dinner." If true, and it certainly rings as such, this represents an appalling indictment on the pernicious effects of the sliding scale of class. It lurks silently in the shadows, largely unnoticed or ignored by disinterested onlookers passing by on the other side and upon whom it has no effect, but, by definition, afflicts in increasing degrees those who fall lower down the order. Yet, whilst piecemeal strikes from the wings may have limited impact, there are no armies of social equalisers on the horizon preparing to cordon it off. Is it any wonder that people feel increasingly disenfranchised from those tasked with sourcing a resolution in plotting a path forward? And is this not being reflected in political upheavals, not just here, but across Europe, that see a swing away from the established parties towards those offering alternatives, some of which may be attractive when clutching for straws, but which are far from healthy under scrutiny in the longer term? This is powerful stuff, and it should be of serious concern. Whereas not so long ago, this reliance on one's background would, particularly in the days of empire and a more general attitude of accepted civility, have been accepted as the inevitable, if somewhat occasionally uncomfortable, norm, society itself has moved on, whilst those same norms have remained hidebound. The growth in diversity, with all that entails in terms of broadening our communal perspectives, the explosion in education and the expectations arising therefrom, the recognition of alternate ways of lifestyle, the rise in alternate social mores, and perhaps more significantly, the profound shift in our country's role in a greater Europe and the world, in contrast with the time not so long ago when the sun never set on those parts we actually administered, all of these are at odds with the social scaffold fundamentally out of kilter with that it is intended to support. The long-term effect of this is at very least a weakening of the edifice. I'll proffer no firmer prognosis because it is simply too traumatic to imagine the consequences of total collapse. Yet it is not all doom and gloom, for we already have the nub of the solution in our grasp. That solution lies, as it inevitably must, in mutual respect and forbearance based on meritocracy, social mobility, interpersonal communications, anything, just anything, other than outmoded social ideals based around accidents of birth. And the result? Well, I give you Exhibit A, in the form of that once delightful pub in Wollaston. And to demonstrate how this works on a larger scale, I present the utterly compelling Exhibit B, namely, us black country folk and them there Brummies. Long may our feigned rivalry, but ultimately generous cohabitation, continue to offer the world a model of how, and in the best of humour, it can be achieved.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!